listen to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to episode 124 of Rogue Startups. This week, Dave and I are continuing a bit of our updates from last week's episode, since we've had, we had almost a month in between update episodes, and talking a little more in depth this week about some competitive surveillance that we're both doing. I think really the theme is learning from people that are doing things well in our industry. And I think it goes, for me, it goes to product and marketing and sales and design and all these kinds of things. We've recently kind of come off the back of it with Castos. I mean, Castos is influenced pretty heavily by what we think are some of the best things in podcast hosting. And so we've done that now with Sales Camp, doing that again in a market that I'm not terribly familiar with. But yeah, Dave, I mean, I think it's interesting to be getting into to some of this, like picking the best of several different worlds across different parts of our business, right?
It is, but at the same time, I think one of the things that I really struggle with, so I'm just like you, I'm a total collector, right? So I love to go out there and find things that are the best of email marketing or the best of abandoned carts or the best of e-commerce or the best of UX or the, it doesn't really matter, the best of something. And I've got like all kinds of swipe files where I save everything that I come across, whether it's lists in Pocket or emails from people's things that I've come across or snippets of text that I'll take notes out of videos and stuff like that. And I have it at Evernote, but you have to be careful that it doesn't turn into like a Franken app. Like you just start bolting together. Oh, I'm going to take the best of this from Intercom and the best of this from Help Scout and the best of this from .mailer and the best of this and the best. And you just sort of put, throw them together in a haphazard kind of way. I really have to stop myself from doing that. Cause that was, first of all, that was the, like the way I sort of approached Support Vine. And it was totally wrong. It was absolutely the wrong thing to do. If you're going to be pulling best of, you got to make sure, is that best of thing something that your customers really care about? Like, is it super important to them?
So you're talking more in terms of like product and features?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, I think if we're really honest with ourselves, if I'm really honest with myself, building Castos as not being entirely dependent on WordPress isn't paying off just yet, at least. I mean, so we're still getting almost all of our new customers running on WordPress and from WordPress and using the plugin to manage their podcast. We have, I don't know, say out of 100 new customers we've added, we might have 5, maybe 10 new customers that are not using WordPress. So, yeah, I think that's one of those things we looked at it and said, everyone else is kind of an open platform. We should be too. Whereas I think in a way, kind of what you're talking about is some of your restrictions can be like a competitive advantage. You know, you say we are only this for that. And then people really identify it much, much more readily than to say like, oh, you know, I'm a general purpose abandoned cart recovery tool. I think it's a little tougher to say like, oh, wow. Yeah, that's totally for me. Right.
Right, right. In fact, you know, I have one of my mastermind groups. They're beating me up on this. And in fact, at Big Snow Tiny Conf, I think the same thing came up. But the guy that was there was also in my mastermind group. So it could have been like just he found two different venues to beat me up about the same
right.
thing. But it was exactly that. Like you should become the abandoned cart solution for fashion stores.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but I'm there's nothing about my tool that's specific to that. I'm like, it doesn't make any sense. And they're like, no, this is how you niche down. You speak to their problems. And I'm like, but nobody searches for this. And so I struggle with that. I really struggle trying to figure out how to niche down aside from, well, I'm the abandoned cart for Shopify or I'm the abandoned cart for Magento. That's niching down. But they're talking about niching down even further to say you're within this group of people. And I can see that if you had specific messaging around fashion stores or whatever, that you could personalize it that way. It just feels weird to me to niche it in that artificial fashion, because it isn't unique to that. Like, it doesn't matter that you're on a fashion store, you're doing e-cigarettes or supplements or motorcycles. Honestly, and those are all different kinds of stores that I have right now. Like, there's nothing that stops them from using the tool on one versus the other there. So, yeah. Making that niche work is tough.
Something that this totally brings to mind is so in all honesty, I've been playing around with a couple of different email tools in the last week or so, and have definitely settled on using Drip for Sales Camp. Was looking at ActiveCampaign because I kind of see it a lot, and it is positioning itself as like email marketing or marketing automation tool for SaaS products, whereas recently, everyone probably who listens to this podcast knows that Drip rebranded itself as like an eCRM, so a CRM for e-commerce, which doesn't speak to me. And I know that I listened to The Art of Product with Derek, their podcast, and Ben Orenstein, and they talked about it on a podcast episode recently about like they had to kind of like put the stake in the ground and say, this is what we are. We're here to help you sell more stuff online. And we're an email provider that helps people sell more stuff online. And to a lot of people on the surface, that says e-commerce, like selling motorcycle parts or selling shoes or whatever. And doesn't speak to me as like a SaaS tool. I tried ActiveCampaign. I didn't like it. So I'm using Drip. Although, like, the positioning really, like, they said this is what we are, and to me that said, oh, that's not really me, right? And so I think, like, you can, like you're saying, you can use it for other stuff, but if you're really, really, really specific about who your product is for, it runs the risk of turning some people off, unless you do a lot of education around it, which kind of defeats the purpose of really, really niching down in the first place. So I don't. It's a tough one.
I mean that's exactly one of my fears, that if I get somebody, let's say I'm saying I'm the abandoned cart solution for fashion stores, and then some guy comes in and he has a store that has the motorcycle parts. He's like, well, I'm a motorcycle parts guy. What do I care about fashion? This is not for me.
Yeah.
And then they walk away. It's like, wait, no. Yes, I can do that too.
Yeah.
And I felt the same way about the Drip rebrand. It didn't suddenly seem like either of my businesses were the things that they were promoting anymore. It just got too vague at that point. So, but I mean, I'm still using them. It still works just fine. It's not a problem. It's just the brand stopped talking to me, I guess. So yeah, you got to be careful about that. You got to be real careful about that.
Yeah. And I think that the lesson that we probably can learn, seeing what Drip went through and being run now as and by a really big successful organization, is they did their homework. They said, okay, the bucket that we think we can have the most impact with and the type of customer that our product is best for is this eCRM type of customer, people that sell stuff online. And so if they're going to lose a little bit of whatever, whoever, maybe the you and me of the world, who are probably never going to spend more than $150 a month on them, but they're going to get more of the $500 a month customers, then they've done the research to say this is a good thing, and if we alienate some of our customers, that's fine, because the upside is so much higher on the other end that it's worth it. So I don't know that you and I have the data or the experience to be able to say that with a lot of conviction.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, I mean, shit, we don't even have our first paying customer for Sales Camp yet, so we're still trying to figure out which way is up, but I think if you can say that really definitively, that we are the this for that and we're going to forsake everyone else, then it's fine. Until then, I think it's a fair thing, like you're doing, Dave, to say we're abandoned cart recovery for Shopify, and anyone who uses Shopify can come in and use us. And down the road, you might discover that, oh, we're really, really, really good for this. But I think even then, you could probably just develop some marketing to those people. But it doesn't have to be your whole brand, right? I mean, I think devoting your whole brand to an aspect of a market is is ballsy, at least.
Well, and I totally see why going after e-commerce would make all the sense in the world. Like, the ROI in there is insane. Like, if you can set it up so that people are sending more emails and recovering money, that's an easier sell than trying to get some dude with a SaaS set up and having their onboarding process and their general marketing process and their churn follow-up process, where the ROIs is not quite as straightforward. You know, you've got to really put some analytics in there to kind of figure that out. So from my perspective as an e-commerce SaaS tool now, I totally see why they're going after it.
Yeah.
And heading after that market there. It just makes a lot of financial sense. But as one of the guys not in that market, you know, when that brand stops talking to you, you're like, whoa, wait a minute. I thought we were friends.
Right.
Yeah. But it's not personal. It's not personal. And, you know, I still think the world of Drip, and I think Derek and Rob and the team have done a fantastic job on the tool, and they've worked very hard. And obviously the rebranding took a shit ton of work. So I don't want to take away from any of that stuff there. And anybody listening should not interpret that otherwise. But yeah, I mean, a brand has got to go where the customers are and where you think that audience fits, and that makes all the sense in the world. So.
Yep. Yeah, I was glad to have given another very reputable tool a try, and just it wasn't for me. And I'm very glad to be back at Drip, like you said. Love supporting the guys that have given us so much, and it's a great tool as well. So, but I think getting back to kind of the competitive surveillance, if we can use a euphemism. You know, the way I've really started using this heavily is to look at really how my competitors are acquiring new customers, because it's really like the whole name of the game. And there's a million ways you can acquire new customers. And I've just started looking at the whole marketing strategy from top to bottom, from top of funnel to bottom of funnel, with some of my competitors, and trying to get a sense of like where I see them a lot, what kind of ways that we're seeing new customers come in that don't know us and don't come from WordPress, and I think it's really powerful to get a sense of where your competitors are getting new customers and where you're seeing them a lot. Because it's something that's definitely like reverse engineerable, right? So you can just say they're over here doing this, and you can go do some of that and kind of take some of that new customer flow away from them. So I don't know. Are you doing anything specific with in that respect with recapture at this point?
Oh, hell yeah. In fact, I've been doing that all last year. The channel, I mean, looked at a lot of different channels and a lot of different places and tried to figure out like, where are they hanging out? Where are they talking to their customers? Where are they doing the acquisition? Are they able to do any paid advertising, paid acquisition? So there's all kinds of tools out there that allow you to do that. SpyFu, Ahrefs, SEMrush. And I've tried various flavors of those to see, is one of them giving me better information than the other? And I looked at various sizes of competitors, the medium ones, the larger ones, because they're the ones that are most likely doing paid acquisition, and just trying to find, you know, is content marketing working for them? Or is Facebook ads working for them? Google AdWords, whatever. And I found some interesting stuff in that you can see some historical trends about how much they've spent over time. And if it's constant, then you know that whatever that channel is, that's a channel that they are pretty confident about and they're continuing to dump money in. But what's interesting is that I don't see a lot of my competitors putting huge amounts of paid acquisition into a set of keywords, a particular set of ads. Like, they're dabbling as if they don't really know what's working and what's not. So it seems like they're willing to experiment. They're trying things out, but they haven't really nailed it down. And I got a sense of that talking to the CTO of one of the large competitors and the founder of another competitor when I was trying to figure out whether recapture was going to work for me or not. And they'd given me a verbal analysis of that. But of course, I didn't believe that going into it. And I'm like, huh, that's interesting. All right, well, I'll file that away. I wrote it down. And I checked, and I'm seeing kind of the same thing, but I don't know, one thing that's hard to tell from these tools is what is what is the exact strategy that they're going against. Like, it'll tell you the keywords that they're paying for, but it doesn't always show you, like, all the ads historically. So you can't see, like, what they've tried in the past. You can only see what's active right now, which isn't necessarily even a remotely accurate or complete picture, which is very frustrating. And maybe I'm just using the wrong tools, but in the three that I talked about, I haven't seen that. They'll show me what's running now, but not what's run in the past. And so you get a very incomplete picture about what they're trying to hit and whether it's effective or not. And, you know, there's a lot of things that have to align. Like, they might have the right keyword and the right audience, but they've got the wrong creative and the wrong headline and the wrong image in front of them.
Yeah.
So it's just not resonating. So that's one of those things that you would not notice unless you're watching them all the time. And others, you know, you've got things like creative fatigue, so, or ad fatigue, where they show the same thing over and over and over, and then after 6 weeks or so, the audience is like, fuck this, I'm sick of it. That, it doesn't matter that it was effective and that you nailed it. They're tired of it. They don't want to see it anymore.
Yeah.
So that factors into it as well. And that can be very frustrating. But I recently came across an untapped tactic, and I had tried something similar to this when I first started with cold email and Magento, but I didn't do it the same way that these guys did it. So I came across it by looking through the reviews of one of my medium to large-ish competitors. And somebody complained about the specific tactic that they used. And I was like, what? I didn't. What? That's a surprise. I didn't expect that. So, yeah, they grabbed a list and they specifically went through and did some tests on the site, found out whether they had a competitor installed, and then they went and contacted them and said, "Hey, we can do this for you." And I'm like, "Oh, that's interesting. That's fascinating." It's definitely a lot of work, and I mean, by no means sharing this tactic does it actually guarantee success with it, because you still have to nail the messaging, you still have to nail the timing, you still got to have a decent set of follow up, and you've got to approach them the right way, and you've got to, you know, you want to make it personal enough that they don't think that you're just doing stupid cold contacts here, that you've actually bothered to put some research into it. So, I mean, to make this work right is going to be a lot of work. But if this is the technique that they use to scale their business to a significant six-figure MRR, then it's got my attention.
Yeah, yeah. This reminds me of I saw this from Mike Buckby. So he did this with SendCheckIt, which is a tool that checks all of your like liquid tags and links in an email to make sure nothing is broken. So he signed up for a bunch of autoresponders from big companies and then ran the emails that they sent him through the tool and then emailed him back and said, "Hey, did you know you had a broken link here? Or this said, hi, F name," or whatever. And yeah, I think that's kind of like what you're talking about, is to opt in your potential customers to your tool and show them like what the potential benefit of it is. And I think that's fantastic. Yeah, I don't have an analogy for that in my world at this point, I don't think. But I think that things like that, where if you can show people your tool without them doing anything, without them signing up for a trial or anything like that, it's super powerful, because they can see the value and the ROI without doing anything, which is the whole key to getting their attention, I think, is say, "Hey, if you used this, this is what would happen." And then you can say, "Wow, that's great. Let's, you know, book a call or view a demo or whatever." That's fantastic. I would be all over that.
And something else, speaking of the best of that we were talking about earlier, I was also looking through this competitor's reports, and I noticed that they surface things that are similar to what we have, but in a very different, specific, nicely summarized way. Like, you go to this dashboard and it is like pounding you in the face with how much more money your store is going to make in a year based on the lift that you're getting from them. So it's like it is straight in your face. And the way that it's done in Recapture, like, we do a pretty good job of it. You know, it says, "Hey, you've spent this much and you've made this much." And the numbers are, you know, on a store where they have any kind of volume and they're making sales, like there's usually a 20 to 50x difference, sometimes as high as hundreds of x between what they've paid and what they're making. So that's awesome. That's the kind of ROI that you want to have customers see. You want to put it in their face and make it very clear. But that page only happens when they cancel.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's got to be like their dashboard, right? Like they log in and see.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think that can work the reverse. Like if somebody logged in and they had more of like a zombie account and they were paying like $49 a month, but they were making zero,
sure.
They'd come in after 3 months and be like, I've paid you $147 and I'm making zero.
Right.
Cancel.
Right.
And that happens, you know, zombie accounts are real and trying to get people to engage with that is tough. But, you know, there's only so much you can do. But the ones that are
You could even say, like, if revenue is greater than X, display this. Otherwise, don't, right? I don't know if you can see their revenue.
I can totally see all that. All of that data is totally transparent to their store. Yeah. We have access to all of that information, including their gross revenue. So, yeah, all of that is definitely there. But I like the way that they summarized it. Like, they basically said, here's your pre-revenue. Here's the total percentage lift we're giving you. Here's the total gross revenue you're going to make this year as a result of us.
Yeah.
And that, like, it's titled in a way to make that abundantly clear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, without us, here's the lift. With us, you know, like you immediately walk in and you're like, oh, this thing's making me money. I'm good. These guys are good. Like, I like this. And just constantly reminds them of the value that you're providing. And I was like, oh, God, I need that in recapture. That's killing me. Something like that I think would be very, very important for customer retention as well as longer-term engagement. So,
yeah. That's fantastic, man. I've been looking more on the – similar, I guess, on the marketing and messaging side of things, trying to learn a market, which, as you warned me, I think will take a very long time and is something that I'm going to be doing for quite a while. I had my first customer like demo booked for tomorrow. So that'll be very interesting to talk to a potential customer for sales camp. But I've just been doing a lot of like subscribe to all of the email lists of our competitors, gone and watched their webinars. And there's some huge, massive players in this industry like Ambassador. I don't know, hundreds of millions of dollars companies. I don't know. That's probably an exaggeration, but I mean, I know Ambassador is a giant company. And they definitely are a direct competitor to us. And so I think it's a little bit like, how do you take some of the things that these people are saying? And you did a nice job of kind of saying you would look at the small to medium players, because I think some of the things that the big players are doing probably just isn't feasible, like running paid ads. From a financial perspective, running paid ads probably isn't as feasible for me as a small business as it is for someone with venture funding or has been around and is doing whatever $200,000 a month. But also just the positioning in the market, I feel like a little bit that, like, as a smaller app or business, it's reasonable to market to smaller businesses. One, because I think they kind of get you and get kind of what to expect from you as a small business. Whereas, you know, if we went after whatever, a huge company as a potential customer, I think we would have a lot more work ahead of us to kind of fit their needs. Kind of looking at like some of our competitors in the context of they need to be similar size to us, for us to look at borrowing some of the best practices that they're shelling out. But yeah, it's been interesting. Lots of emails, lots of ebooks, lots of videos, trying to get all of that stuff together in a new market has been fun, and I've definitely learned a lot just in the last week since we talked last. It's interesting.
Yeah, speaking of big versus small, you know, one of the things – so here's a trend that I've noticed ever since Drip and Who else has added this? ConvertKit. So ever since Drip really added in their workflows, so the visual workflow aspect of the tool, literally everybody else is now copying this now. So there's a big one in MySpace called Klaviyo, and they now have the workflow manager or whatever. And I looked at a demo video of it, and it was like, it wasn't as clean of a UI as what Drip has, but it was the exact same thing.
Interesting.
And I'm looking at this going, you know, this is nice and it's useful and there's definitely a use case for it. But when you add this in, those of us that think like developers, this is a very straightforward thing to go through and think about. If you're not a developer, then all of a sudden this looks very intimidating and complicated and difficult to master. So there's like all these video tutorials, and I know this because there's all these video tutorials that are sitting out there explaining how to do this and always repeating over and over, this is not hard, this is very easy, you just have to do X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. Just do this, A, B, and C, you know, whatever. But if somebody's having to repeat that all the time, then that workflow is not that easy to work with, right? And there's a certain subset of people that are going to get there, but like with e-commerce owners, I've noticed that there's a huge number of them that are fairly non-tech. You know, they don't want to deal with all the development aspects. They don't have the skill set to deal with that. They know about selling. They know their products. They're willing to do some stuff like writing descriptions and writing articles and stuff like that. But when it comes to the technical details of setting up email marketing and things like that, they're just not into it. They could do it, but then they want to hire somebody else out for it. So I've seen this on a couple of customers where they're like, well, we were doing this, but now we're upgrading and we had to hire somebody to do this. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Which tells me that with my tool, they didn't need to do that. And when I've sent out customer surveys, I've asked, what are the things that you like about Recapture? And I've heard multiple iterations of simplicity, easy UI, intuitive to use. I was able to figure it out without going through your documentation, didn't require a lot of thought for me to make it work, you know, that kind of stuff. So there is a level of the market where you can go in and say, we're the simple solution for that. You don't have to learn all this complicated stuff over here. You don't have to figure out what triggers are and splits and decisions and exit points and because you're not there yet. Like it just – your business doesn't need all of that complexity. You just need to send these out and be done.
Yeah.
So stuff like that, you can use that as a competitive advantage with SalesCamp if you're targeting the right segment of the market. So, you know, like WP Engine targeted the mid-market WordPress, managed WordPress hosting. Drip targeted the mid-market email marketing. And so you have to figure out what does SalesCamp target that the high-end guys don't do a good job at, or they're too expensive or they're too hard to use for. That's more than just what the little guys do on their own.
Yeah. No, you know, so
I think that's what I'm doing. Yeah, because I think that's what I'm going to end up doing with Recapture.
Yeah. No, I think that's great because I think it's easy to get into, say, like the lower mid-market, like you're saying, like Drip did, like ConvertKit is and did in WP Engine, because the price point is good. You know, $50, $75 as an entry point, because we definitely have some people. An ambassador is one of them. That's like $300 a month is the starting package. And so that's just technically we're not there. Support wise, we're not there. Education wise, we're not there. We could sell, you know, we're going to start at $40 a month. So we can sell that to a lot of different type of people, but then you go up market from there, to have more features and a higher price point to start with. But talking about simplicity, something that we really are honestly struggling with right now with Castos is we have probably 2/3 of our customers come in and say, this is the best thing ever. This is so easy. I can't believe I was, you know, futzing around with trying to wire this up to that and copying this iframe and all this kind of stuff before. And now it's just so easy. And then we have the other probably third or quarter of the people that come in and say, I have no idea what this is. Why am I here? What am I paying for? How does this work? And And so, like, I sit and say, like, all of our customers are coming basically from the same two places at this point. We try to position ourselves as, like, the easy to use, gets the job done, does everything you need it to do, but doesn't have a ton of, like, bells and whistles and stuff. And we definitely have it. Honestly, we have a breakdown in messaging or training or onboarding or product to where we are. We have more support burden than we probably need to have, because some people say this is great, this is the easiest thing ever, and some people say I have no idea what I'm doing here, and it's a little frustrating at this point because we're getting a fair amount of new people every day or week, and yeah, I mean, you know how it is, like some of those are just complicated to talk through. So it's interesting to say, like, we're going to be the simple solution, because there's just always those customers that nothing is simple. I don't know, but
well, yeah, simple is relative, right? I mean, what's easy for us is not easy for everybody, and what's easy, you know, as a developer, you know, the skills that you have to acquire in order to be able to write computer software are much, much different than somebody who has mastered Excel, is much, much different than somebody who can, you know, competently browse the web and use Google versus somebody who doesn't even know where the power switch is on the computer. Each of those is a different level of competence with computers, and the software developers are definitely at the very high end of that, because there's so much you have to understand about the inner workings and all the different tools, plus all the ancillary stuff on the side, and then be able to actually just do all the things that everybody else can do. And I'm not saying that because developers have some superpowers or anything like that. It's just a different kind of knowledge that you acquire. Yeah. I mean, I know shit about the legal system. And lawyers have to, like, specifically dive into law in general and then specialize in an area of the law. So even somebody who is, like, good family lawyer wouldn't turn around and do intellectual property law and be totally lost in there, even though both of them went to law school. Maybe they even went to the same law school. Mm-hmm. Who knows? So, you know, when you talk about simplicity, you have to ask, who is this supposed to be simple for? And, you know, in WordPress – with the plugins, I've seen tons of people come in, they're running their own sites, and the first question I ask them is, you know, how much experience do you have with WordPress if they're coming and getting our install package? And a lot of the times I'm getting like, I've never used WordPress before, I can barely spell it. And I'm like, and then I get some that are like, I know, you know, not to annoy you, but I probably know WordPress better than you do. And that's a wide, wide range of people to deal with there. And I think the support, like I can tell you disproportionately in the support, we spend more of it on the side where people just don't know, they're new to WordPress, they don't understand things that you would expect somebody who's building a WordPress site and customizing it to know about, like how to do custom CSS, how to install plugins. Sounds really basic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not so basic. It's not as basic as you think. How to update plugins, how to install a theme, how to change the settings, what settings are available, where are those settings, you know? All of these things that you would think, oh, well, that should be pretty straightforward and obvious, and, you know, go look at the documentation. None of that turns out to be obvious to certain kinds of people.
Yeah.
And so that's where things like video tutorials come into play, and very simple picture laden how-to guides. Although I favor screencasts these days, because I, with some narration, I can walk somebody through exactly a series of steps to accomplish a goal. And I think that works really well if you can speak in non-technical ease to get there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, simple for who is the question. So you can say, well, we're the simple solution for podcasting on WordPress. But, you know, how well do you know your customers, and what kinds of customers are they, and what level of expertise are they walking in your door with? And, you know, these are all questions you're going to have to figure out with Sales Camp, you know, which you don't even know yet because you haven't figured out what your personas are and your audiences and all of this stuff. So
yeah, no, for sure. I have a long road ahead of me with Sales Camp, I know, but Yeah, for a lot of the reasons we talked about last week, excited about it as a business. But, you know, for Castos, we're doing two things because we realize this is a problem. I mean, we talked about our trial to paid conversion ratio going down some. It's getting much better this month. But we're doing two things to really take a critical look at this. One is I have two different people that I kind of know and trust that are moderately tech savvy, but very familiar with podcasting, that are going through the setup process of installing the plugin, signing up for an account, going through our emails, all this kind of stuff, and giving some really critical feedback, because I am way too close to all of this to know what is easy in reality, right? Because I helped to build it and design the workflow and all this kind of stuff. I wrote all the emails. And so for me to have to take a critical look at, like, okay, is this easy? Are we providing the resources and the documentation? Are our onboarding emails any good? I can't say that anymore, really. I mean, I can, but I'm obviously not doing as good a job as maybe I need to. So having two people that I really respect and trust go through that. And we're definitely looking at, like, our product a lot. Like, do we have things in our product that work well or don't, and can we add or remove things to make the product just easier to use? Maybe it's not going to be better, but maybe it's just easier to use, and that'll just be better for the business. It's, you know, more conversions, lower support burden, all these kind of things. So I'm excited to see. It'll take a couple weeks probably to suss all this out, as you would say. But yeah, it's definitely at this point kind of like the product is relatively static. We're developing new things all the time, but right now we're definitely looking at, like, the how do we onboard new people easier and keep them around, because in our next kind of like wave of marketing, I don't want to bring a whole bunch of new people in and just have a giant support burden, because they both won't convert. And if they do, the support burden would just be immense. And then they go tell their friends that our stuff sucks. So that's not something I want to do. So
that's the wrong kind of word of mouth.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Well, yeah, if you can get it. I mean, this was super helpful. So during I think we talked about this last week, but I'll repeat it again because it goes with the exact point you just made. And that is trying to get the right kind of feedback about things and making it easier. So we were doing Shopify beta app testing for Recapture. I sent it out to some people. Some of them responded, some of them didn't. One of them sent me back specific feedback, and I was badgering him about it. He's like, "Let me just send you a screencast. It'll be easier." But he was also like a pretty technical guy and pretty savvy and knew installing things really well. He's actually not a developer, but he is still pretty savvy in general. And by creating a screencast of exactly what he was doing, and I got to hear, like, he was just mumbling to himself as he's going along, like, "Well, I think that's what this is. I don't know. What the heck is this?"
Yeah. Yeah.
Just to hear his internal dialogue aloud all of a sudden made me realize that's not clear. We need something there. Oh, my God, we're missing that step. Holy shit, why are we going to this page here? That makes no sense. Like, just seeing him do all of these things and struggle was perfect. Absolutely perfect. So I sent all that feedback to my developer, Mike, and had him retool all of the things that were broken. So, that one thing alone is probably going to massively improve onboarding conversions right there, just because all of those things that he struggled with, I'm sure other people would have struggled with, especially the less technical than him would have struggled with it. And maybe they still will. I don't know. Maybe we've got, light years to go on that. But the very fact that I got that kind of feedback is awesome. And there are tools that actually you can do that. There's a usertesting.com site, although it's kind of an expensive service. And you can get somebody to go in and try your stuff out, and then they'll record a screencast and do that. And then there's a usertesting.io, and I think you can go to like peak.usertesting.io, and they'll pick somebody, they'll send them to your site, and they'll have them try to accomplish a task for 5 minutes, and they'll send you a video of it. Okay. Which is, I've had them do it on a couple of sites of mine. It's kind of useful. I mean, they're using this as an advertisement for their site and their service. So, you know, if you have the money for that and you want to go into deeper testing, that's a great way to do that. The 5-minute videos I got back were still kind of useful to just find out, does my marketing message make sense? Does somebody who hit that page understand what my value proposition is? Can they navigate to some basic things on there? And they definitely can do that. So, you know, having tests like that is also very useful as well.
Yeah. No, for sure. And I think especially as you – and you're probably at this point with Recapture where you have a good number of customers and now you're really trying to find like – I don't want to say like the next step or the future, but I mean it definitely is product-driven and marketing and onboarding and support documentation driven or independent. And us as the founders and the people that work in it every day – it's so obvious to us, but it's not obvious, and it shouldn't be assumed that our customers can do all this stuff. So I think it's really healthy to get a third set of eyes on these things. But I think some of, you know, it comes back not to be podcasty about this and bring it all full circle about
it home, baby, bring it home. Come on,
borrowing from our competitors, right? But it really is like if you're gonna go get inspiration from competitors about a tool that's similar to yours, you have to be able to implement the technical side of things, create a marketing message that makes sense for you and your audience and that your app can deliver on. And then you have to be able to provide the support and the kind of customer success as you get those customers in the door. So I think that what we do to probably a pretty small extent is healthy. But I think it's really dangerous too. If you start doing too much of this and getting inspiration from all these third party external sources of your competitors, because then you could, as you say, like build a tool that doesn't solve a particular problem and address a market or have messaging that isn't kind of consistent with who your existing audience is. So I think those are, fair warnings for us, maybe that, like, yeah, go get some inspiration from your competitors, but make sure it makes sense, like, you know, coming out of your mouth and living in your product and everything. So that's my message to myself, I guess.
There you go. And if you have any thoughts about getting inspirations from your competitors and what you've done out there, or things that you might be struggling with, we would be happy to chat about those more on the show. Give us a ring at podcast@roguestartups.com. If you have a minute and would like to leave a review on iTunes and tell us just how little sense we make, please feel free to do so. There'll be a link at the bottom of the show notes. Until next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.